हरिः
ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 17. Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. He also taught them the Dhanurveda with its most confidential secrets, the standard books of law, the methods of logical reasoning and philosophical debate, and the sixfold science of politics. So here, so far, there's different groups of what he's being taught. So the first group was that that of just how to live in the ashram, the brahmachari ashram. Right? What's the proper behavior of the brahmacharis? What's the culture? In other words, the Vedic culture. How to behave, understand. That's the first thing that's taught. Right? When one takes the initiation from the spiritual master, that's the first thing that's taught. Then the second thing that's there, it doesn't mean these don't go on together, or meaning is then the order of the importance. Then the second thing is then he's taught the Vedas. Right, along with all its corollaries. So that will mean that you have the Veda itself, then you have Siksha, Chandra, Vyakara, and Nirukta, and you'll have the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads, right? Makes all sense. Yeah, of course, yes. So that means that they'll learn the Veda, they'll learn the Sanskrit, because how do you approach the Vedas through the Sanskrit? Right? Then you learn, and from doing that, then there's certain things that have to be done. So that then is how you do the worship. That's the kalpa. And then from doing, to when is the proper times for doing the worship, then that's jyotish. Right? So those are all necessary for performing. Like, how do you know when to follow a codicil unless you also know how to calculate when there's a codicil? Right? And then along with that, then also the Upanishads, so the philosophy of this. So it's not even just how to use it, but what's the metaphysical meanings of it, and what is the philosophical understanding. So all that together, then you would say that's the central Vedic study. Right? Then he's saying along with that, then he taught all the other aspects. In other words, the 14 books. So then you have the, what's it called? Vedangas, Upangas. So then the Upangas, then that will be the different philosophical schools. Then that will be the histories. And in those histories, then Dhanurveda, Ayurveda, Sthapanaveda, Gandharva Veda, these are all part of that. Then a logic, an argument, Dharma Shastra, all these different aspects will be taught. So then the first thing is being taught the ashram activities, or the cultural activities. The second is learning the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. Then having learned the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, then we see is then there's going to be details, of course, according to them as Kshatriyas. Right? So here the BBT purport mentions. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the confidential portion of the Dhanurveda, military science, includes knowledge of the appropriate mantras and presiding deities of warfare. Because we see Arjuna, then he knew the different weapons, right? Because you can use all these different weapons within the system. And so then you have to know the mantras for that. Right? Let's say Arjuna has the Brahmastra. He has to know the mantra for that. Because you're shooting an arrow. We have to remember, it's just a regular old arrow. Right? Then you chant mantras, then that arrow becomes a Brahmastra. Just like we see when the Pandavas were going down after the whole, where was that? That was, yeah, after the House of Lakh, when they were going, and at one point they get to the Ganga, and it was in the evening, it was already dark, so Arjuna is holding a torch. And then in the river there is Chitrata, you know, king of the Gandharvas. And because it's nighttime is the time when the Gandharvas can use the water bodies, because people don't bathe in them at night. Right? You don't go to them at that time. Any water you need, you have taken your bath. Any water you need, you have collected at that time and left. Then after the humans have their evening bath, that's now the time for the Gandharvas until the morning, the Brahma Muhurta, when then the humans will use the water again. Right? So because Arjuna and them are approaching the Ganga at that time, then he comes out, he attacks them, because this is improper. He's not supposed to do that. And in his attack, then Arjuna, he had that torch. He just chanted the Agni mantras and threw the torch at him and destroyed his chariot. Right? So, does that make sense? Or we see sometimes they take a blade of grass, and with that they throw that. So the point is that's whatever it is. So the bow and arrow, is that's your standard weaponry. But you can use anything. Does that make sense? You know, you probably wouldn't use a donut, but yeah. Yes.
Is this happening on the spiritual level, turning things into...
No. This is just the metaphysical. Yeah. Spiritual, then that's another thing. It's transcendental. It means all these mystical things and all that, that we're used to seeing here, that everybody's able to use, that's metaphysical. It just means they know the science up to a particular level, very high level. While spiritual, then that mystical element is just how Krishna's interacting with all the devotees and pleasing all the devotees. Does that make sense? So that means they have they know the weapons, they know the mantras that go with them. Because otherwise, if it's just an arrow, it's called sastra, right? If it's with mantra, then it's astra. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Then, dharman refers to the Manu Samhita and other standard law books, dharma shastras. Right? So there's 40 of them, 20 of them are main. And so of them all, then Manu is the main. So Manu is the actual main shastra. You know that. Then you know all the others. The others will give various details for a specific yuga or for a particular aspect of Manu. They'll bring it out in more detail. Right? But they'll talk about everything, but they'll focus in that area. So Manu is meant for the four ages. Some will say, oh, that's previous. It's Kali Yuga. It doesn't matter. It's written for all the ages. So people can put that one out of their mind, right? Then, for us to support, then Prabhupada mentions Yajnavalkya and Parasara, because they'll give more detail about application of Manu in Kali Yuga. Manu already mentions the points, but he may only give one verse, and so Yajnavalkya and Parasara may give more verses to give a little bit more detail if you don't catch it from the singular verse that Manu gives. Right? Does that make sense? You catch the mood, just the Manu's enough. But you need a little bit more detail, just in case, than these other two. So for us, basically, that's what we study. Manu is the main, and then with the Yajnavalkya and Parasara. Yes? Yeah? Nyaya Patan refers to the doctrine of karma, mimamsa, and other such theories. Anvikshikim is knowledge of the techniques of logical argument, tarka. The sixfold political science is quite pragmatic, includes sandhi, making peace, 2, vigraha, war, 3, yana, marching, 4, asana, sitting tight, 5, dvaida, dividing one's forces, and shamshaya, seeking the protection of a more powerful ruler. Right, Prabhupada mentions, it means these, he mentions the 4, about samadana, beta, danda, like that. So that's your political techniques that you're going to use. Then if when you're talking about actually the actual moving of the forces or dealing in that, then that's these 6. Does that make sense? So, because when you're dealing it in here, that are you making peace? So that's going to be a main thing. So we see making peace is in both of them. So that's a very important aspect. And then we have war. Then that's also there, because you see the middle two aren't used as much. So then asa means sitting tight, dividing the forces, seeking protection. That's just what's going to work at the time. Right? Or marching, yes. So and then there's all the variations of that. Does that make sense? So Krishna, they learn all that because they're Kshatriyas. Right? Others then, they may go through it, but they may not specialize in it. They may not focus on it. But because they're Kshatriyas, then they're going to do that. So we see is that you have the two aspects. You have the one is that they've learned the 14 books themselves, but at the same time, they've also learned the specialty according to their particular nature. So a Kshatriya is then the aspects of politics, and that they need to know more of. You know, the Dhanurveda, they need to know more.
Asana sitting tight
means that you don't move your army.
Oh.
Or you don't move, or you sit in the palace, you don't do anything. Because the thing is, you have to know, are you more powerful or are they more powerful? Do you have a better strategy? Do they have? Do you have allies or not? So all these things have to consider. So if you don't know, you sit tight. Then if you have the allies and all that, then you may march with them. Like that, and then in dividing, sometimes you see as you divide, means part of your army is on this side, part's on that side. You know, that's a very common thing, is that you have the army here, but they don't know when you come over the hill, they think that's all you have. They don't know that half your army went around the mountain and is on the other side. Does that make sense? So you start attacking there, they'll put all their effort there, and then when their effort is there, then they'll come from the other side. Does that make sense? Or there might be two battle fronts. You have to fight this, but another thing's more important. Whatever it is, you're dividing the army. Seeking protection of a more powerful ruler is you're not powerful enough to deal with your enemies. So then you seek the protection of others. Right? And then with them, then you may march, you may all these things like that. Does that make sense? But making peace is always the best. Right? So the two most effective of the four aspects of politics is peace and war. Right, giving positions and facilities and threatening, those may or may not work. Right? They're effective, but they may not be the most effective. But if you can create peace, that's always the best, because then there's no loss of any assets or men. Right? There's no disturbance. But if the other three don't work, then war is the effective one. Because then you just solve the problem. Does that make sense? Sukadeva Goswami continued. O King, those best of persons, Krishna and Balaram, being themselves the original promulgators of varieties of knowledge, could immediately assimilate each and every subject after hearing it explained just once. Thus, with fixed concentration, they learned the 64 arts and skills in as many days and nights, right? So after learning the culture, the Vedic culture, then learning the Vedic knowledge, it means all the Vedic knowledge in general, then learning the specifics according to their particular varna, then they learn the 64 arts. Right? And so Krishna and Balaram, being who they are, then they learned just by hearing once. They would hear the explanation of a particular shastra, they would know it. They wouldn't have to repeat it. And then the 64 arts, also again, they learned them, their 64 arts, they learned them in 64 days. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after hearing only once from their teacher, Krishna and Balaram learned all the arts and sciences in 64 days and 64 nights. They learned all the necessary arts and sciences required in human society. Because some of the things are dealing with night, like how to do lamps and other things, music and all those things, you know, so like that. They learned all the necessary arts and sciences required in human society. Right? So the arts are important for human society. Animal society, not necessarily, but human society. And we see as a general proclivity of those in human form to be attracted to the arts. Right? But as we see is that the system that was learned here is the sciences are learned first. It means the shastras learn first. So the culture is learned first, because only with the culture then you can apply the knowledge you'll have. Then you learn the Vedic knowledge, then you learn your vocational duties, then they learn the arts. Yes.
In contemporary thing, because it's not going like this. So sometimes people divide their students in the sense that some are more have more proclivity towards science and some towards art. Right. But if it was taught as it's supposed to be, would it be the same?
Yes, you would split it at some point, but you'd split it at the third stage. Right?
So some people would still be... they could have learned science more properly if they were taught...
It's like this. Well, whether you've had the experience or not, you have those who are good in art, but you can deal with them. They're very balanced. They're very, you know, they're just like anybody else in dealing. But they're very, very good at what they do. And then you have the guys that are just, you know they're an artist. You know, the way they deal, the way their mannerisms, the way they talk, the way they get emotionally all, you know, right? Okay. So the Vedic concept is how to avoid that second group. Right? They should be good at music, but they shouldn't behave like that. So the main thing to do is you always teach science first, right? Because that's what it's based on. And then the art is taught, then you learn how to use it in so many ways. And according to your ability in the art and science, then you'll be that good of an artist. But because it's based on science, it's not speculative. You understand? Well, the modern, it's all speculative. It's all about how they feel. So then that how they feel goes into all their culture, into how their varna. It goes into everything. It's just, it's all pervading their artsiness. You know? Does that make sense? So that it means even amongst artists, they always joke about artists being, but it's accepted because that's just the way they are and they're good. But it's always a joke, even amongst artists, that they're a bit too artsy, like that. Does that make sense? You know, so, yes.
What is it meant by learning an art? Because you also said that art becomes better by practice. What is it meant by that?
Yeah, but they're so good that they, when they learn it, they know it. Means, for us, these 64 arts would take a bit longer than 64 days.
Means like one learned all the elements of how it should be applied, and then like all the
Krishna and Balaram would have learned the whole thing, learned what's the science, what's the aspect of it, how it works, all the technical points, and how to actually apply it. Does that make sense? Because if you understand very nicely the science and the key points of the art, then you can apply it, and the more you work with it, the better it'll become. But because Krishna and Balaram are the original source, right? It's the Prabhupada will give the example that just like the ocean is the source of all water, but we see the rivers are coming down from the mountains and that and entering the ocean. So it would appear that the rivers are, how you say, nourishing the ocean. But actually, it's just the same water that was evaporated by the sun from the ocean. Then turned into clouds by the moon, and then you get rain, and then it comes back to the ocean. So Sandipani Muni, by teaching Krishna and Balaram these, you know, the Vedic arts and sciences and knowledge, then it is in that same way, just like the rivers are going into the ocean. Does that make sense? So for Krishna and Balaram, they would have learned it fully, like that. So they're the perfect students. For us, it'll take a little longer. But the technique is the same. That's why they go to Gurukul, to show that this is how it's done. This is how it's learned. Does that make sense? Because without the ashram side, you don't know the character. And so whatever knowledge you get, you won't have the character to apply it. You know what I'm saying? So girls can learn that character at home. Right, by the association, if you're applying it, but boys tend to not learn it at home. right? Because of the influence of the mother. Because the mother will take care of everything, then what does that put them in? It puts them in the feminine position. And so because of that, then they'll make it always about themselves. Well, if they go to Gurukul, then no, it's about following the orders of the teacher, and they're just one of the boys there. So they actually have to come into that masculine position. Right? So at home, boys, how will they be trained as to be boys? How will they become men? Right? It means they'll be their health will be good, they'll be taken care of very nicely by the mother. Right? They'll gain those religious directions, all these kind of nice, good things. But to become a man, that won't happen, because how can a woman make a boy into a man? Right? Men have to make, you know, just like with the support of the father, the girl feels comfortable and protected, and then the mother feels protected. But the training of the girl is happening from the mother. Right? The principle of it can be there by the father, but the detail of it. That's why the mother knows the boy is behaving badly. You know, let's say he's trying to get something done for himself. The mother knows that. But because it's the son, then it kind of goes. But when the daughter tries to do that, the mother won't allow it to happen. You understand? That's why girls can be trained in the home, but boys can't. Is that something?
The mother can inspire the boy to
Yes, she can inspire him to be religious, do nicely, do a good job, but someone else has to actually point out the faults, because the mother won't tend to. Right? Husband, yes. Right? You know, son, no. Right? Because she'll behave in the feminine position for the husband, so she'll point out the difficulty. But for the son, she'll act in the masculine, so the son will be in the feminine position. Does that make sense? So then it works differently. Right? And so the mother and daughter, then it's going to be the mother's going to be the center of attention. The daughter has to come in line with that. You understand? So it's different. So that's why traditionally girls learn at home, boys learn outside at a gurukul. Does that make sense? You know, or the girls are learning from, you know, in their own mothers, their aunts, their grandparents, or, you know, like this, or like this, or the extended community. In some way it can be set up, but it has to be more of a home environment. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Well, the boys, then it can't be a home environment. It has to be a monastic environment. The simpler it is, then the more focused they can be. If it's more complicated, then they'll tend to get distracted, right? Since they tend to get into the secondary aspects of the mechanics, they will tend to not see the essence. They'll just get caught up. So even within the secondary, you have to see the essence of the secondary, and then you're trying to connect that to the primary. Does that make sense? So that can be pointed out in the Gurukul, because it's the same thing day in, day out, repeated always. And then with time, they start to learn what to do. Well, with the girls, then the girls, or if the boy's at home, the mother then is going to create all that variety, so they'll never actually see the pattern. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's a science, how it works. Like that. You know, it's just like your Western cliche, you know, the boy goes out and does the farming with the men, so spending that time with them, or builds the barn, or he goes off to the army, you know, and then he goes away a kid, he comes back a man. You know, that's because in those environments, then that discipline, all those things that the mother wouldn't apply, then that's where the boy learns. And then once he learns, he becomes a man, now he can function in that environment with the women and do okay. Does that make sense? Now he can give support. He can. Otherwise, before he was in the feminine position, the mother has to do everything. Now he's in the masculine position, so now he can take care. So the basic point is: you want to take care of your kid your whole life. Don't send him to Gurukul. You want him to take care of you when you're older. Send him to Gurukul. That's basically your options. Yes.
So with the girls, the mother is the center of attention. In what sense? When you mention that.
If you have women, what is always the underlying element that's trying to be established?
Yeah, is the queen.
Yes. So then the mother, she's the queen.
But it's still about the daughter. I mean, when
she's she's about the daughter, but it's still the mother is still the center. You know.
And that's all right for the kid?
For the girl it is, yeah. Because girls are always conscious. Boys are not conscious. You understand? So boys, unless they go out and they're in the gurukul environment, only then do they become conscious of what's going on. Because every day the same thing happens, and after a while they go, hey, there's a pattern here. You know? Does that make sense? You know, I... I come late to do my work and somehow or other people aren't happy, you know? Because if he comes late for doing his whatever he's supposed to do with his mom, and his mom, you know, shows the angry look, then he just gives that cute smile and all that, then everything's fine. So that's generally, like in the Gurukul, we have that 3 weeks where we first test. That's to see whether they can adjust to that their cute smile is not going to work. That's what it's for, you know. Is that they come there, they do things, they try to use the, you know, the cuteness and all that, and that's going to make everything work. And when they find out, no, you're still just one of the boys. You still have to come on time. You still have to do this. So the cute smile's not enough. You know, it's nice you got a cute smile. That means, you know, it's better than, you know, if the guy had fangs and was biting everybody or something. But, you know, so in that way it's good, you know. But at the same time, it's not enough. You know what I'm saying? So that's going to be the difference. Is that what I'm saying? Yes.
The difficulty seems to be is that the guru system applies a lot of pressure on the parents and on the kid for quite a long period of time. We see Krishna Balaram, it went quickly.
Have God as your son? Hey, your problems are solved. Remember about the apple and the tree?
Yeah. Well, we can say that for Devaki and Vasudeva, they also suffered for quite some time before that. But then whatever, the question is, in modern scenario, there's no pressure whatsoever on the boys till they're quite mature. Like you mentioned, army or going, you know, you have to be developed.
That's in places where there is an army. But now, whatever, there's no army. So where's the pressure?
The wife.
That's if they get serious about a girl. Right? So the whole thing is that it's not until actually when they have to use their training in the modern that they actually, there's some pressure to actually have it.
Right.
So isn't that a bit late? It means if you're supposed to start at 5, and then by the time you're 25, then you're really solid trained. Or whatever it is, until 18, 20, whatever is the natural time that you're going to be involved in that. Then, because the point is the earlier they come out, the earlier they get attached to a girl. Right? So whatever is your time in the Gurukul, that's the time of training. So now when they get attached to that girl, now they can start to use that training. They may or may not have appreciated it before, but they do have the training. Right? And so then they can apply it. But now if there's been no pressure to learn all these cultural elements, then when it comes time they get attached to the girl, now the girl starts applying the pressure. And the problem is there's nothing there. You know, it's like an empty bank balance. There's nothing. So what's the the girl is acting according to being a girl, because girls are always going to act like girls. So she's applying her pressure according to her natural, you know, inherent instincts of how girls apply pressure to boys. But the boy, there's nothing there to work with. And so basically it's just the hope that maybe something will happen. And if, let's say, he's come from a more cultured background, like that, you know, like I said about the apple and the tree, then there might be something there, but it's there from when he was small. It's there from when before 5 years old. So whatever he gained there, that can work on and that, and then maybe after some years, you know, 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, then they finally get it together and then they can be nice vanaprasthas together because everything's comfortable. But if there's not so much background there, the mother wasn't that trained, so she doesn't know how to apply. In other words, she's acting in the natural, inherent feminine way, but she doesn't actually know the fineness of it, how to be effective in it, then the boy won't have any basis, and so therefore there's going to be a real problem. So the modern, we're used to that, but it doesn't actually give a very good result. So it's not something we can use as, really as a comparison. We can say as yes, you know, just like, can we use as a comparison that, yes, all my family members, they were, you know, committed to, you know, how you say, meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and what's the last one?
Illicit sex.
Illicit sex. There was always one missing, right? So, because I was thinking, when I started, I was thinking, gambling's the last one, that's the one you forget. So I thought, don't forget that. So I said that, and then forgot the, yeah. Okay. So, they're committed to that, you know, but is that a good thing? Does it have any value? So that's the whole problem is that the modern being a speculative thing, it's lost it. Because before the Western meant, all your Western universities, the big old ones, are established in the medieval time. They were all priests. They were all trained in their religious discipline and behavior. And then in the classics, which then showed how people, you know, that's the modern Purana, how people behaved, what was the culture and everything like that. Then they learned all the different, you know, arts and sciences and different things like that. It was expected you had to have that very wide range. Then you specialized. So the medieval university was much closer to the Vedic. But then with the Age of Enlightenment, then they throw out all the priests being there. Priests can still teach, but it can't be about religion anymore. Right, unless it's a religious school, but we can't say that how many devotees they went to or their parents went to an actual specific religious school. You know, it was a Catholic school teaching like that. You know, but you understand how many went to something like that or went to a yeshiva or went to, you know, something that was very, very specific about the religious training. So that won't be generic. So then that part's gone. And then the general knowledge, yes, that would be there. But nowadays they found that because the art is the attractive part, the science is more the boring part. So they're trying to catch students' attention as they become less and less qualified by presenting the art. So then it just makes things worse because then everybody only knows arts and that maybe they get into science. If the guy's smart, then he does. But otherwise, and that's dependent more on the family. Right, parents are doctors, more of a chance he can go into that line. But if they're not, it's more rare that they'll go in that direction. So the modern is very weak because it's left even its own roots. And that roots goes back to the Vedas. So the whole point is that pressure being there, then it makes the whole thing work. Because it's a matter of, let's say, there is the aspect of the family interaction, and so then the Gurukul will put some pressure on that. But it doesn't put the pressure on up to the age of five, right? Because that's the standard time. That's when they actually get benefit by being in that environment. In other words, the more that they're taken care of, the more they get the benefit then. Now from 5 to 10, you could say is now pressure is there, while in the modern the pressure wouldn't be there, and you get that other 5 years of very nice interaction. So that's, you could say, that's missing from the Gurukul. Yes. But from the age of 11, basically speaking, no parent can say, everything's going nice from there on. Because that's when they become punky. Father can deal a little bit. Mother, it drives her nuts. And father doesn't really have time for it. So that means from 11 until he's dead, then you got a problem. Unless something comes up, like the army or, you know, something that somehow or another turns him around. But generally that'll happen when he's 30. And then, now you'll start to see he sees the value in it, so he starts to try to behave nicely, but he doesn't actually know what to do. So maybe by the time he's 50 or 60, then now he has that you know, proper, grateful attitude where he'll kind of get involved and kind of put in that time with his parents and see that they get put in a good home and, you know, come and visit them on a regular basis. Like that. But we see is that for that 5 years that we think we can get something from, then how many years we lose? Well, in the Vedic, you can't deal from 11 on anyway. So it's only from 6 to 10, those 5 years. That's where your sacrifice is. And by sacrificing those 5 years, then when they come out of the Gurukul, from there until the end of their life, they're good. They can actually take care. They're responsible. They can be a man. So that's where we're looking at. 5 years, 50 years. 5 years, 50 years. 5 years as a kid, 50 years as a man. That's the thing. So we get our 5 years. So it means, in other words, of the nice time, the parents get 5 years, and the school gets 5 years. So it gets half-half. But after the training, then the parents get the benefit the whole rest of the life. The teacher doesn't benefit from that. You know, knowing that they went nicely and they're doing nicely and all that, that's good. That's you know. But the direct effect the parents get. And of the parents, especially one, he can help the father and all that, but the one who gets the most benefits, the mother. Because now he can act as a man. So now instead of having one man in the life, now you have two. And so it becomes more secure. So if you look at the long term, then it's always going to work. Because without pressure, how does anything develop? So that's the thing. Is the pressure makes it develop quicker. Like a pressure cooker. It speeds things up. So yes, it is, but that's what human life is. Human life means is that we know this, so we go through that. Animal life means, no, it's just what I feel like, so I do like that. So when you have most functioning on the cultural platform of the animals, then it makes it very hard to take part in the human aspects because no one else supports like that. But, you know, what to do? Does that work?
Yeah, I was thinking that because of the attachment, the parents, or yeah, specifically mother for the son,
right,
she could calculate, as you gave the calculation.
Yes.
So people, at least they know, some of them, they know how to calculate.
Yes.
So she calculates as you did, but then she thinks, okay, I lose those 5 years, and then afterwards I get, even if it is explained,
right,
then... But then she thinks, no, but he's going to get married, that's it, he's gone.
But that's what you see with all the other guys. See, now why is it he has to be gone? Because if he didn't get training, you know, in Gurukul, then the wife needs to spend full time to try to domesticate the guy. And she can't tolerate any other woman having any influence, you know, i.e. the mother. But, right? Hence the modern concept of mother-in-laws. Right, yeah. Because it's not Vedic, there's not really a problem with mother-in-laws. That's why for us it's more of a kind of a joke. But at the same time, it's, you know, like that. So, but... In the Vedic thing, he's a man, so he can deal with his wife. His wife's satisfied. Then she can deal in a bigger thing. Because if she's not satisfied at home, how can she deal in a social environment? Because in other words, dealing in a social environment, that's pressure. But if you have that strength, then that pressure is nice. But if you don't have that support and that strength from being in the home, then going out is just a disturbance. It's a distraction. You always have to be nice, and it's all about everybody else. And then when you get your time, because when you go home, you still won't get your time. So how long can a girl go on like that? Does that make sense? You know, hence the, what is it? The tall, dark, suave, guy and things like that. You know, the tradition is that, because there's a concept of a support. Because that's the main thing. So if that's there, then the girl being strong, then she can be so social, she can take care of everyone, take care, do everything. It means it's like, does that make sense? In other words, if the battery is full, you can do so much. And if the battery is not, you can't do anything. Is that something? So, in the modern sense, yes, the daughter-in-law has a good chance she will keep them away, unless she is a person comes from such a very strong, nice background where at least the father and the brothers were a good support. Then she'll kind of she knows a little bit more how to iron the guy out, and then being in that environment and there, so she may work better with the family. But if she's not, she herself is not so secure. And so, therefore, because the father didn't take care, she's attracted to a guy who won't take care, then she's not going to like the mother-in-law. Because she'll be trying to establish herself as the central feature, right? Which the husband's not supporting. Because he only knows how to be the center of attention. And then when the mother's around, his mother, then he becomes the center of attention. She's left out. That's why they don't like the mother-in-law to come around. It's not that they don't like the mother-in-law. They don't like the effect that the mother-in-law has on their husband. So that's why you see is that they're gone. But if it's done nicely, then he's not the center of attention. The mother may give that, but it's only between them. But the wife will be the center of attention. And the mother, technically, she's properly trained. She doesn't have a problem that the wife is the center of attention as long as the wife is submissive to the mother-in-law in their personal relationship. You know, she deals because she's elder and all this and that. So they have that etiquette, but she knows she how to defer in those cases. If she doesn't, that's a problem. You know, then the son will have to work that out. So it has to be that the son is then guiding the mother. You know, and how to properly deal in this exchange. But he can only do that if he has that ability to be a man. That's why we see in the Vedic, the first thing that focuses on the culture. As the culture develops, the more knowledge you can be taught. Because until the culture is there, you can't actually teach much. They can't study much. Right. So that's why the culture is the main thing. And then you will also be able to apply it. So then in this way, they don't have to worry because he won't be gone. Because if he's a man, then he respects his mother. He'll respect his wife. He'll respect his daughter. He'll respect all these things. So he'll take care of everybody. Like that. And so he'll be able to help the father in taking care. So that's why also in the Vedic tradition, generally they'd be together as a bigger family. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, the science, if it's understood and applied and appreciated, then you'll see it will start to work. It may take time for it to work in the ideal, but the point is if we don't start now, then you know, it just is that much longer that it'll be delayed. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to think of our own personal, but we also have to think of the longer term of this of the child and the longer term of the community itself. So that's the whole thing. As you see, is the first thing Vasudev did once he's out of prison, and he's then, you know, been able to be reunited with his son. First thing he does is this whole Upanayana and Gurukul. That's the first thing he does. And then after that, then you see is that the Dwarka pastimes then go on for another, 100+ years. You know, so that's the whole idea, is that the kid's nice, but kids grow up And so when he grows up, he should be as nice as he was as a kid, as a man. And so that training has to be there. And it'll be a man longer than he is a kid. Because the cuteness is 10 is it. They turn 11, cuteness is gone. That's it. That's just the way it is. Like that. You know, so the 10-year-old, it won't last forever. It lasts for 1 year. That's the point. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that, and after that, then it's just a raging flood. So the idea is that if you want to, you know the river is going to flood, means that you know that it's going to flood at 11, then that means you have to put the sandbags before that. So that means you have to start from 5. You put the sandbags, then when the river rises, there's no flood. So the idea is, no, I've had parents say, yes, we appreciate that, so we'll keep them up to 10, we'll send them to you at 11. Then I say, but then it's already too late. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. You know, it's like this, because their idea is, no, because they said, we want to squeeze the maximum we can out of their childhood, that's why we became adults. But then, yes, you've squeezed that 10 years, and then the next 80, 90 years, they're just an animal. And so then, is that actually being a parent? Saying that parents are supposed to save them from death means becoming human, becoming Krishna conscious. You know, so that's the whole point. So if the parents do that, the child won't do very well. And if on his own, somehow or another, by tricks of fate, then when he turns 30 and he's married, he has kids, he has to have a job, he's, you know, in the rat race, then he starts to get a little sober and all that, then he gets miserable from that, then he starts to turn to the alternative of, you know, possibly chanting Hare Krishna or something, hanging out with devotees, he starts to see that that's the only real thing. So then, yes, now he's started to take up that. So at that point, then the parents start to get some credit for raising a devotee. But that means all that time before that, they get zero credit. It was about themselves. So we do have to look at that aspect, is that it is a responsibility. So becoming parents means we want to take part in that aspect of the child. That childless, having that relationship and having that lifelong relationship. But since the whole point is to become a devotee, we also have to understand that facet. Because Manu then mentions father, mother, and teacher. They're all three to be considered. While in the modern, it's only mother and father, or if it's just a half a family, you know, a protonic family, then it's only mother or father, right? And so then, you know, or, you know, 2 weeks with the mother, 2 weeks with the father, you know, whatever's the arrangement. And so then the difficulty comes is that they don't consider the teacher at all because they themselves aren't stable and steady. So they can't accommodate. They can't accommodate, the mother and father can't accommodate each other, let alone a teacher thrown into the mix. So that becomes the difficulty. But that's what's human, is that the teacher is also involved. Is that, yeah? So if that's understood and accepted, then more effort would be put into the educational system, where then they would see most qualified people would be there. So in the past, people will say, well, Gurukul didn't work very well, but look at who did they put in the Gurukul, right? If you couldn't manage, you couldn't do Sankirtan, and you couldn't do any other specialized service that the temple president wanted, basically you were a nebbish, now you're qualified for Gurukul. And I'm not joking here at all. Not one, you know, bit. Because if you could do anything else, why would you do it? I've had people that the temple thought that they were useless. And when they found out that they were actually good at something, they took them. Right? The guy was an MA failed. Right? I don't know. They still do that in India? Yeah. They mention it? Yeah. Because you'll say MA in the West. Why would you put MA failed? Because the point is at least he got that far. He finished his game and he actually he applied himself. Though he failed, but at least he's better than others who didn't even try. So this guy was an MA failed. So then the temple go, oh, well, maybe he can help in your math department. Right? I'm thinking, yeah, right. But since there's nobody else, then he's the math man. After a year, when they found out he actually did know something, and he was good, and they needed an accountant, he was gone. Like that. So anybody who's good, they were taken. And then the blame all goes to the Gurukul because they're all bad. If you give the school's full of bozos, what do you want? You know, you're going to have a circus. Right? And then they complain, well, the Gurukul's a total circus. It says, yeah, who made this circus? But that, it'll never work. It works on the, what do you call it? Oliver North principle. No, don't know that. I'm not sure when it was. Anyone knows that one? Back, I think it was back in the 80s. They went to do some covert. Yeah, in the first Iraq War. And they went in there with the Black Hawks and something went wrong and they crashed and all that. And they hung it around the neck of the corporal or someone who was directly dealing with it. But all the guys above him, because it wasn't supposed to have happened, but it was authorized by everybody above him, but they left all those and just went to him. Because he was the one directly responsible. You know, he was the commanding officer. And so then the whole thing went around on him. So, but everybody was talking, what about the guys above? You know, so that's what all the complaints about Gurukul, you know, back, you know, before and this and that, it's the Oliver North principle. Because who put those people in, who authorized it, who said what you could do, how much you could do, who gave the money, who didn't give the money, they're all the ones that are complaining. So in reality, no one can say, oh, we tried it, because I would contest they didn't try it. There are some individuals in the system who gave it their best shot, but as far as authority went, who tried it? Who supported it? Who put in money, manpower, time, care? Nobody. So we can't use it as what's happened as something to do. We can say as yes, following the modern context, then we still get the modern context. But if you follow the Vedic context, then you'll get the Vedic result.
The parents, you know, when they put the son to the Gurukul, and what happens is that the son complains that he's missing the mother. So should the parents force the kid in the Gurukul or should they pull him out in this case?
The child's missing the mother. Well, it depends upon what's the parent's concept. What would be the basis for pulling the child out?
So that he's with the mother, give him some time, and then put him back to the Gurukul.
Depends if that's the idea. So is the idea is he should be at home or he should be at the Gurukul? So is that this is an excuse that Gurukul doesn't work, or it's a matter of he's not mature enough?
Yeah, because they keep on saying that he's mama's kid.
No. You have to answer the question. Is it a matter of he should be in Gurukul, but somehow or another he's not mature enough at this time? So, okay, we take him home. You know, like that, he's with the parents, they encourage him, they discuss more about it, they get him enthusiastic about the school, then he goes back to the school, or is it that, well, actually, he shouldn't be in Gurukul, but, you know, because everybody says it's something to do, Prabhupada says, Shastra says, so we're giving it a try, but it didn't work, and so now we're just being realistic and doing what actually should be done.
The first one.
Yeah, as long as that's there, then, yeah, it'll work. But, yeah, so the whole point is it has to be, but has the parent tried to encourage them to stay in the school before they've made the decision to take him home? Or as soon as he goes, I'm missing my mom, then they take him out. So if they've encouraged him and tried and it's not getting any better, and the school also agrees, then yes, then he goes home and spends some time. And then whenever it is, after some weeks, some months, some years, like this, depending on the individual. That's why the school has the policy that they can try to come to the school 3 times. As many kids, they don't make it on the first time or second time. Like that. You know, they're just too attached, too self-centered, you know, lack of training. Whatever it is, that they are more comfortable at home. And some kids never make it. You know, and so being at home, then they'll be comfortable and all that. They'll grow up and they'll be a nice guy. You know, how dynamic they can be, that's another thing, but they'll be a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Because mothers usually lament that the elder son is in the Gurukul and the younger one is with me, you know, so that way. So they have that, they compare, you know, between the two sons, usually. You know.
Yeah, but so, there's a difference. The point is how old is the older son?
He's 11.
11. If he was at home, the mother wouldn't be able to do anything anyway. So can't say, oh, but, you know, see how he's behaving and this and that. That's what 11-year-olds are like. If he was at home, he'd be worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? The point is in the Gurukul, it's from, yeah, it means 8, 9, 10 is a very good time to study and everything like that. But when you can really get through to them is starting from 11. You know what I'm saying? But because you have the relationship from before that, that's when it's strong. Because at that time they start, you have to explain everything to them. Before that, the 10-year-old is nice just because he's nice. Even if no one's trained him, he's still nice. So basically no one gets the credit for his niceness at 10. And then when he turns 11, then the brain starts to work. It works in its own peculiar way. But it starts to work. Right? And so then you can really get through. It means 11, 13, 15, you try to, you know, tread water. And 12, 14, 16, you can actually get some change done. You understand? So the point is he wouldn't do well at home anyway. And I've heard parents, oh, you know, we sent him, he was so nice, and now look at him. Because he's 11, what do you want? So most parents don't have this understanding because the kids that they have are their first kids. So we're not talking like Bach here who had, like, I think, 20 kids, you know, that they start to see a pattern here. Or, you know, how you say, you know, Irish Catholics who have 50 kids or something, you know, at least according to Monty Python, right? So then they don't see a pattern. They have no idea what it means to raise a kid. It's just that he's there and so they're dealing with it. And they want to deal with it, so they give it their best effort. But as far as knowing the science about kids, that's the advantage of Gurukul, is they know the science. You deal with hundreds and hundreds, thousands of kids. You know what I'm saying? So you know what works. You know how it is. And then you have the individual, right? You have the generic thing, and then the individual, you have to adjust for that. But that's the way it is. Just like the masculine and feminine principle. That works on everybody, and then there's the specific of the particular man and particular woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So the principles are there. And so then, if that's appreciated, then it works nicely. So he is like that. Be happy that he's there, and he's a little bit civil. He does a little bit. You know? You have to see parents. So do you see some parents that their kids come home in the teenage time and they come home, they do work around the house, they even cook, you know, do stuff? Have you heard of this or no?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't heard. You're not hearing around much. She's heard. Others have heard. They do.
In the villages, not so commonly seen now.
I'm talking about the Gurukul.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
You heard of it?
Yes.
Yes. So now if they had been living at home that whole time and not gone to Gurukul, would they be doing any of that?
No.
No. I mean, you'd be in the negative to try to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
Negative 1,000% they wouldn't. Right? You know what I'm saying? So is there an improvement? But you see, they're different. They don't interact the same. They don't try to use all the cutesiness to get anything done. They're more straightforward and all that. And if your mom misses the cutesiness, then what to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Hang out with someone else's little kids or something. You know, wait till you have, you know, grandchildren, right? You know, so can't have everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
you get the cutesiness again, but then you're a grandmother, right? You know, somebody be, oh, you're a grandmother. I'm not a grandmother. Don't call me that. You know? So nothing's perfect. Nothing, you get everything you want. It's always going to be. Yeah, you get grandchildren, but then you're a grandmother. You know? You have children, they grow up. You know, it's everything, it doesn't happen just that way. Only in the spiritual world, then Krishna will be a baby eternally in a particular pastime with Mother Yashoda. Another time he's in another age. And so he's, you know, he'll be Kumara eternally. You know, another pastime will be Paugandhi eternally, or Kaishore eternally. Mm-hmm. You know, so that only happens in the spiritual world. Here, this doesn't happen. That cute little Kumara somehow or another has a beard. Right? You know, it's just not quite the same. Right. Yes.
And with the girls, we talk about the boys. But the girls, when this goes wrong, after they're at home?
If they're at home, it just depends, as long as the mother is training and explaining everything. So one of the mistakes in the modern society is no one explains anything really about behavior, especially about dealing with boys and girls, until they have a boyfriend. So the whole principle is that in the modern is boyfriend, dealing about boyfriend and that, then it's the sexual aspect. That's the only thing that's changed, because otherwise they're just going to be just as badly behaved. But you've just added sex into it. While in the Vedic concept is proper behavior is what a girl is being trained in. And so, therefore, when we add into the element of sex, it's proper behavior within that context. So it's seen as proper behavior. So then, what is chastity? What is proper behavior? What is dealing nicely? It's all seen as culture. So then, if that culture's been being trained right from the beginning, you know, right from the beginning means, you know, right from when, you know, yeah, right from the, yeah. Always. Even when they don't talk, you're still explaining everything to them.
Each two.
Huh? Well, that's when they may respond, but you're already explaining it beforehand. They catch the vibe. Mm. Just like your dog. Does he understand English? No, but he understands that he should not have, you know, chewed the pillow up. Right? Because you're pointing at the pillow and speaking with him strongly, he kind of puts two and two together, right? Like that. Even though he does not know English. You know?
He's a Bengali boy.
Huh?
He's a Bengali dog.
Yeah, he's a Bengali dog, so he doesn't know English. Right? Right. Yeah. Is that anything? Yeah. So right from the beginning, it's there. From two, then you can interact and have a dialogue. But before that, you can explain everything. So that means they're explaining already proper behavior from before, and so then they catch it. Because girls like to fit in, so it's not a problem with them fitting into what's there. So if they know the context, but you always have to explain why. So if parents only tell them what to do and never explain why, then you got a problem. Because someone else will go, why do you have to do that? It's so much more fun to do this. They go, oh yeah, right. That's what's happening to, that's your ABCDs. Nobody ever explained to them. Right? So that's the point. But if they had been explained, they wouldn't be ABCDs. Right? ABCD? Deshis. Yes. You understand? They wouldn't be that. Because they wouldn't be confused. They just know it's a good market to make money. And so, you say, problem in India is Indians are good at making money. But in India, there's lots of Indians. You go to America, they're not so good at making money. So you being an Indian there, you do well. Like that, you know. But you don't have to be confused. You know who you are.
Boy child is still at home. Is it possible to tell that is he now ready, mature enough for Gurukul or not?
You just have to try. It's just a matter of trying. I mean, the point is, from five is when it comes up. But if you see, is that depending upon what's there, if motive goodness is more prominent, then five is there. If motive goodness and some passion is there, then six. If passion and ignorance are there, then eight. Like that. So it can be later, but it's not because it's a better thing. It just means that the kid takes a little longer to mature. That's all. you know.
How valid is the theory that if you send it too early, then it's traumatized?
And all these people talking about trauma, you know, how is that working out on the community and Grihastha level? You know what I'm saying? How about all the trauma that they create for each other? You know, because they didn't go, the man didn't go, how much trauma is there for the women? Like that. Oh, it's always, that's the trauma. Okay, what about this? If a mother and father fight with each other in front of the child, that destroys faith and authority. And we see nowadays, people don't have faith and authority. So, who's destructive here? Who's traumatized? Mother and father get divorced. Now, the mother and father, they are just legally connected. So if they're together or not, then it's just a legal thing. But now for the children, whether they're to get married or not, they are your parents. So when parents break up in that, who's getting traumatized here? But for the parents, it's, well, just mommy and daddy couldn't live together anymore, so the kids have to understand. So in a society that's designed to traumatize kids, and now they're going to find fault like this in Gurukul? The point is why is he traumatized when he goes to Gurukul? That means the parents themselves didn't train him at all. So the problem of the trauma is the parent. Right? So the whole point is have they been telling him about Gurukul from what age? That he's going to Gurukul from what age? If he's going to go at 5, you have to know before that. At least by 3, you know that you're going to Gurukul, and that in Gurukul you have to do this and that. Now you're like this, but you have to learn. They're teaching him. They're teaching him how to do things, how he can eat himself, how he can dress himself. They're there to support, and they're always doing for him, but when he wants to do, they let him do that. Well, a lot of parents, the kid wants to dress himself, they don't let him, because then what is the parent's business? What's the parent for? The taste is doing it for them, but now they don't want to do it. So you push it until the point the kid freaks out. Is that not trauma? And now he doesn't want the parents dealing with him at all. In fact, they shouldn't even come in his room. Like that. So you want to know trauma, just look at the modern lifestyle. That's trauma. You know? And if he goes to the modern educational system and he freaks out, are the parents going to keep him at home? Go ahead, knock me out. Is he going to keep him at home? Never. The ones that keep him at home and homeschool are the ones that never sent them in the first place, because they know it's a slaughterhouse. So that's the whole point. They're not going to. It's only when it comes to Vedic, then we pull out all these, oh, we're such nice people. And the Vedic is so bad. So it's just materialism. It's nothing more glorious than that. Right? Seeing the kid doesn't have the ability, you brought it up, they're not interested, you know, you go there and visit, they're not inclined, then what can you do? Then you don't force. But if the kid's interested, he wants to do, he likes the kids at school, you know, has some friends there, one of his friends went to the Gurukul now, and then, you know, he's saying, oh, next year I'm going, like that, then you encourage. And if he goes there, it doesn't quite work out, yeah, you bring him home, you encourage more, and then when he gets a little more mature, he'll try again. Then like that, it works. But this idea is that, oh no, but what about the trauma? What if they blame us later? You know, what modern kids don't blame their parents anyway? And they never sent them to Gurukul, right? If you take out of Americans that are in America, probably 99.99% have not sent their kids to Gurukul, probably because there is no Gurukul over there anyway. So therefore, there's a good chance that they haven't sent them to Gurukul. And so all those kids are perfectly in love with their parents, think that they've given them the best of everything and the best thing that has ever happened to them and all that. Or they all say, you ruined my life, I hate you. And as soon as they turn 18, they're gone. Right? So, since that's there, it has nothing to do with Gurukul. So we shouldn't project these things that the parents will think, it can't be us because we're perfect. We're the best thing for our children. How can they reject us? So if there was a problem, it must be Gurukul. So as I said, Gurukul is the scapegoat, and those in Gurukul are the Oliver Norths. It just makes it very easy for parents and leadership. When in reality, that a society is known by its support of education, right? First world countries, that, I mean, after military, of course, their biggest budget is education. And if you go down to, you know, more, banana-y kind of governments, then you see that education doesn't feature very much at all, you know? So that's the thing, is how much money do we as a society put into education? Did I hear zero? Yes. Individuals might put in, but as a society, nothing. So how enlightened are we? You know what I'm saying? Because as a karmi, then the parent put nothing into education, right? Because the kid goes to the state school, so all you do is pay your taxes. And the state takes care, because you would never know what to do. Does that make sense? So therefore, parents think the state will take care. And so ISKCON's the state, and so they'll take care. But then the point is are they paying taxes? No. So therefore, how is the state supposed to take care? And neither does the state care to take care. You know, they'll talk about, you know, adult education and this and that. No one wants to touch kids' education with a 10-foot pole. You know? And that's fine. But then the problem is these same people that don't want to touch it are having children. So you have to be realistic. So if we don't want to have gurukuls, fine. Don't have children. And they'll say, no, but we went to karmi school and we came out all right. And did we come out all right? where's the community? Where is all that nice, wonderful supportiveness that we talk about that should be there? That, you know, gurukul and the Vedic education and Vedic culture gets in the way of. It doesn't exist. So we're not talking about, yeah, they didn't come out okay. You know what I'm saying? So these are the difficulties we're dealing with. That's why it says it'll take a few generations.
An anonymous devotee said that all these millions that are put in the planetarium, they should first make gurukul.
No, but it's not that you can't stop one for the other. The point is did Prabhupada, is the seven purposes of ISKCON, is one of them to make a place of pastimes of the Lord. Yes, so that means that goes on. Preaching goes on. All these things go on. There's plenty of money. You know what I'm saying? There's plenty of money. It's just everybody should give something for that. So it's that, oh, money's going there, but is the person saying, why are we putting it into that? Are they collecting that money? No, they're not collecting anything. It's one thing if they were collecting that money and they wanted to go for education and the GBC kept saying, nope, it's going for the TOVP. But they're not collecting a cent. So what's their business of making those points? It's easy to say, oh, this one should this and that one should that, but are they doing anything? No. That's why Prabhupada said armchair speculators. Armchair means they just sit in the comfortable chair and pontificate about everything. That's easy. You have to do something. So the TOVP is one of Prabhupada's programs here. They don't like it. That's all right. Because if it's that, someone else's before was why we're putting money in that. We should go into farms, you know, into Varnashram, you know, growing carrots. And that was the big thing back in the 90s. Like that. The point is it's always one against the other. Why can't we do all of them? Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita Gaura Premanda ki.